So the 30th of June has come and gone. It was an anti-immigration protest. And today we're joined by a spokesperson for Free South Africa, Gideon Joubert. Gideon, welcome to the program and thanks for your time.
Thank you. And it's an interesting topic of discussion, I'm sure.
It most certainly is. So let's start off and go fire away. Did it work?
I think it did, actually, strangely enough. It was remarkably peaceful, considering the significant and I wouldn't say far-fetched concerns and fears people had about it. And what struck me about it, what I found as noteworthy, is the coherence and the discipline of the messaging that was forthcoming from the various leaders of it, in the sense that they all seem to say exactly the same thing. So that does indicate that it's very well coordinated and someone thought this through when they organized it. And I think to arrange something like this across numerous provinces and several metros to kick off on the same day, and it does not degenerate into complete chaos, is actually rather remarkable. I think in no small part thanks to the efforts of the police and the private security sector that assisted them in that. But I do think the message that they intended to convey was conveyed. Whether or not people agree with it or not is a separate question, but I think we can agree that the effectiveness was certainly there.
One of the things that struck me was that the anti-immigration protests were seem to have been centered mainly around Malawians and Zimbabweans and a couple of other of our, I would say, neighbors and friends. But you heard very, very little about protest against hypothetically Nigerians and even people from the DRC. And I know here in Cape Town, where I'm talking to you from, and the area that I live in, has a very large Nigerian population. And I don't believe that all of them are in South Africa legally, yet it doesn't seem as though the protests were aimed at them.
Well, that is a very good observation, and it's one that I think I share with you, because I also made note of it privately to a friend. And I think another thing that the protest might miss out on is the fact that if they're worried about crime and criminals, which they certainly are, a lot of our organized criminals from elsewhere in the continent are here in inverted commas legally, in the sense that they have papers to be here. Whether or not they obtained those papers correctly, in all likelihood they may have obtained them fraudulently, but the fact is that they are in theory not illegal immigrants. So the issue of transnational organized crime goes a bit bigger than just people from Malawi, Zimbabwe, and Mozambique hopping the border fence and working for Uber Eats on the side. But at the same time, there's also a question that I have is a sense of the current zeitgeist of this is, illegal immigrants must go out. But is that genuinely the core message of this political movement which is emerging? Or is this just one issue that gets people in the streets, and are we going to see something else manifest in the future?
Yeah, I mean, the other part of the whole thing is that there are two sides, or sometimes three sides to every single story. And I know a lot of the people that work in the industry that I am in, my normal day-to-day job, are fearful for their lives, first of all, but they're also in a situation whereby the Home Affairs Department has made it almost impossible for them to get renewal of their papers. And that side seems to have been completely neglected. I mean, I'll give you an example of somebody who works for me, who came in, got his papers in Johannesburg and needs to renew them. And they're saying you have to go back to Johannesburg to renew those papers. I mean, it's almost making it impossible. And then, of course, the long, long, long delay in getting the renewal of those papers. So if they're going to have a go at the illegal immigrants, should they not also be fighting for those that are legal who cannot get their papers in order?
I agree. And I think that's an extremely valid point, because there are numerous such stories. And I'm talking about people who came here from the DRC on legitimate refugee papers decades ago that have tried to get their naturalization process finalized, where they've married South African women, they've had children with them that are registered, they own and operate legitimate businesses here, And it has just been, to numerous of these people that I've spoken to, been almost an impossibility for them to properly naturalize simply by the sheer, the lack of transparency, firstly, in the process. The second part is the fact that it doesn't seem to be very coherent, and the extremely long delays in finalizing everything and being sent to pillar to from pillar to post. So there is certainly a huge gap in the Home Affairs and how this is done. And that is has not been addressed, and that is the other side of the coin that does require the light shined on it and attention given to it. And unfortunately, that wasn't part of the entire brouhaha on Tuesday, where it very well should have been.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I saw some terrible scenes Cape Town way. We had terrific or terrible weather. It rained. Poor kids standing in the rain in Epping with very little, if no shelter at all. I mean, these are still human beings, and a lot of them, are working and trying to make a living and either send money back to their homes wherever they come from. And are trying to get documented, and they aren't able to. Just adding to that, and is this a fair assessment? And do you feel this? And has this come across your desk before? Because it has across mine, where many people say that South Africans are lazy, and those from Zimbabwe and Mozambique and Botswana come to South Africa and they work much harder.
It's a difficult one to address because, as is the case with all generalisms, there's always a bit of truth in there, and there's always a lot of falsehood in it. And it's a much more complex thing. And I'll give a simple example is, I know of a legitimate businessman who's about to lose a number of his people, in a very specific industry that have been working for him for the better part of 20 years. And again, the reason he's losing them is because they've been stuck in limbo with Home Affairs for the better part of 20 years. And he hasn't employed them because he's necessarily wants is interested in paying them less than local South African workers, but because when they arrived, they possessed a specific set of skills that he required in his business, and he could put them to work straight away. And his problem now is to get anyone in South Africa from the local population to do that work. The amount of training and or rather education he has to invest into them in the hope of getting them up to speed is extensive. So he's losing a human resource that came basically purpose-built for him, from people that had the specialized knowledge that he needed, that they just happened to be from another African country. So there's a lot of nuance to it in the sense of there's a mismatch in skills and education and in willingness to work in many cases. And as much as that's the case, of course, illegal immigrants also get exploited by local employers who don't need to go through the rigmarole of adhering to labor regulations and labor legislation. So it's a double-edged sword. But there's a lot of complexity to the issue. And unfortunately, complexity doesn't get people out in the streets marching for you. So generalizations do that, and that's where the conversation gets lost in all the noise, I'm afraid.
Yeah, so you see pictures that are being sent around the world of particularly people in combat uniform, traditional uniform, waving wooden weapons. What does that tell foreign investors? I mean, what do they say when they see this? Yes, as you mentioned, it went off relatively peacefully in South African terms. But if I'm a foreign investor and I see these horrific pictures of people dancing around and waving knopkerries and assegais in the streets, I'm going to think twice about investing in this country.
I think it comes at a point where we can very ill afford negative publicity pertaining foreign direct investment. South Africa is already considered a very business unfriendly destination for your capital. And that's not just because of expropriation without compensation. And it's not just about overregulation by the state. It's got to do everything from safety and security to the electricity grid, or rather the reliability and the price of electricity for manufacturing, to our infrastructure decay, to our ports. There's a whole stack of reasons why an alternative destination for your investment would be more attractive. And you add instability pertaining social and political issues, as well as you say, an aggressive display of that, and it does send a message. Whether or not that's the violence was ever the intention, whether or not these people had any desire to actually inflict harm on somebody else's that doesn't matter, unfortunately, because investors only look at optics in some cases. And I hate to break it to people, but the optics do matter. And unfortunately, they can be interpreted very badly in this particular case. So that is a relevant concern.
Yeah, we have so much going on in the country at the moment with the Mandla Commission. We have crime, we have President Ramaphosa with his money in his couch, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think this perhaps was like often happens in this country? It was a ploy to divert people's attention away from other more important matters that are going on in South Africa. Not saying that it's not important to tackle illegal immigration, but is it just, I mean, it's so much effort and what, 600 million rand went into policing this over the last 2 days, 3 days since it happened. I mean, is there not better money well spent somewhere else in poverty in this country, job creation, et cetera, et cetera?
I think that's, well, again, a valid point. My personal hypothesis, and that's just, again, my own personal opinion, is what we looked at on Tuesday. I think you can't isolate only to frustration with regards to illegal immigration. I think frustrations specifically emanating from the Zulu population, an upsurgence of sort of Zulu cultural nationalism. As well as Zulu unhappiness with the political establishment has followed a long road for about 10 to 15 years. And I think if you cut through the noise and straight to the bone of what happened on Tuesday, is this was an expression, in my view, of Zulu unhappiness with the status quo, which is probably why this entire protest action will evolve beyond merely illegal immigration. That's just a hot button topic at the moment. For the organizers of this and the people who pitched up in the street, they likely see this as a very valid, necessary, and legitimate expression of grievance. For many of the other people in society, view it as sort of a dangerous optics, undesirable attention, and possibly even distraction from other key issues. But I suppose also, if we're going to be realistic about this, if we are a vibrant democracy, we're probably going to see a lot of this type of expression going on, especially people who we may vehemently disagree with, whose right to protest we have to tolerate so long as they do it peacefully and don't harm anybody. So there's always that the sword always cuts both ways, and that's a very unsatisfying answer and position for many people, probably even for myself, but I do think that's probably what we're looking at.
And yet, Jacinta Ngobeni Zuma has called on marches every Thursday. Can the country sustain it economically? I mean, no work, no pay. Businesses around the country fearful to purchase stock in case of looting. I mean, I understand activism and I understand having this huge protest on the 30th of June, but is it necessary every Thursday?
Well, I also wonder if the movement can sustain it every Thursday, because it's one thing to get people motivated and hyped up for one big mass action event once in a blue moon. It's a whole nother thing to get people out into the streets every week on the same day. And to be honest, personally, I wouldn't expect that to succeed at all. That does seem to me that it's a bit of a compromise with reality, as in we're going to call for more action and then every Thursday, but whether or not that happens, no one's really going to watch. As in today, I know there was supposed to be a whole bunch of additional marches occurring today, and yet it seems quiet and dead peaceful. So I don't actually think that every Thursday's protest is going to become a reality. What it does exposed to me is the woeful lack of preparation from the state to deal with this as a security risk and a security issue. The big concern with that is the Minister of Police last week begged the private security industry for help. The industry answered it. But at the same time, the Minister of Police is trying to push through re regulatory amendments to the private security industry regulations that would essentially prevent the security industry from ever helping him again. So there needs to be a bit of coherence and wake-up call from government as well, is they have constitutional mandates they have to fulfill, and they have stakeholders they need to be ally with and be friends with, and they need to start getting serious. They got lucky on Tuesday that things didn't get out of hand. But you know, they can't bargain on getting lucky every time.
How do you think the government are reacting to this? Because, as you mentioned quite rightly, there's unhappiness and uneasiness amongst the people. They're unhappy with the situation, and ultimately, you know, it's in the government's hands, hypothetically, to close the borders as best they possibly can. I understand you can walk through the Kruger National Park and hope a lion doesn't eat you, and you can just cross in that way. But I mean, it doesn't seem as though the government have really done all that much to stop the illegal immigrants from coming into the country. But how do you think they're looking at it with a local election coming up in a couple of months' time and they're seeing the unhappiness amongst the people?
I think that the issue is becoming a bit of a fait accompli for them because, for the better part of 3 decades, they have sat on their hands and essentially watched it get worse. And when a situation deteriorates beyond a certain point, the amount of effort you have to put in to just stabilize the deterioration, let alone recover it back to where it was, becomes extensive. The resources and energy it takes to do, as well as just the strategic planning to do it. There is no quick fix for it. And there was on social media, there were clips circulating on, I don't think it's called Black Twitter anymore. It's called something else at the moment, but of Prime Minister John Foster back in the day, and this is the better part of 50 years ago, speaking at length about the impending threat of illegal immigration from other African states to the then apartheid South Africa because of the lack of economic opportunities and development in those countries, and that it was of strategic interest to the government at the time to see if they could fix it, probably through investing in other African states. So if it's a 50-year problem that's now coming to a head, fixing that 50-year problem is going to require a lot of hard work, and I am doubtful personally as to whether the state currently has the capability to do that. And that is the bad news. That is the black pill, so to speak.
Yeah, interesting. They can't fix the lights, the robots, and the potholes in Johannesburg. How on earth are they going to fix this? Gideon Jabe, spokesperson for Free South Africa. So thank you so very much for your time this Thursday afternoon.